Hi, I'm Gary Duncan, the Executive Director of Worldwide KFUO. Thanks for listening online to our programs, our stream, our podcast, our online on-demand audio. We appreciate you. Remember, KFUO is a listener-supported broadcast ministry, so we do rely on your support to continue. So please prayerfully consider making a gift today. You benefit from the programs, and you know how important it is to get the message out to the world. And that's what we do every day here at KFUO. For more information, you could call area code 314-996-1518 to talk to Mary, or 996-1520 to talk to Mark. Ask them about the different ways to give to the ministry of KFUO. Thank you in advance for your support. Also, tell your friends about us. Most important of all, pray for the ministry of Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. It is December 19th. Christmas right around the corner. Many of us making preparations for all those family gatherings, those family events, all the festivities that come with it, and food and gifts, maybe some family travel as well. How do you prepare for that? Particularly, how do you prepare for that if you are a foster family? What questions, what things do we need to consider if you are a foster family? Maybe you're thinking about becoming a foster family in the coming year. What things do you need to think about when it comes to the holidays? We have some great guests lined up to help us with that. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. Find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. Look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section. Joining me in studio this morning, a number of guests to help us address this issue and learn more about foster families and the joys, the challenges of it, particularly when it comes to the holidays. We have the Johnson family, Deaconess Maria Johnson and the Reverend Ross Johnson. Good morning, Ross.
Hey, good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Maria.
Hi there. Good morning.
Glad to have you in studio this morning, learning about your family and the joys, the challenges of being a foster family. Also in studio with us this morning, Bonnie Parker. She's a court-appointed special advocate. Is that right, Bonnie?
Yes, it is. Thank
you. Glad to have you in studio. And I have to mention that everybody also is a part of the staff here at the International Center as well. It's nice to know that part of our that our staff here also cares about foster families and serves in a number of ways. Can't wait to learn more about what a court-appointed special advocate is from Bonnie here in just a few minutes. And joining us later in the program, one of our friends from Lutheran Family and Children's Services of Missouri to help us learn more about how they approach foster care and how you can become a foster family as well. Well, right. Well, let's start with what is a court-appointed special advocate? Bonnie, what is a CASA, CASA, as some call it? What do you do as a CASA?
A CASA is the child's voice to the court. Generally, when a child comes into state custody, there's a team assigned to work with them, and it's typically employees of the state, the court, and then if there is a volunteer available, a CASA is appointed to work with the child. And on the entire team, the CASA's primary interest is the best interest of the child. So there may be a deputy juvenile officer appointed by the court. They have certain interests. A caseworker who works for the state, they have certain interests. But the CASA is really there on behalf of the child to make sure their needs are met. So we ask the judge to order specific services to benefit that child and make their experience better.
What are some of those specific services that you might request on the child's behalf?
Oh, boy, it varies. It could be therapy with a therapist one-on-one. It could be family therapy. Could be making sure they get to the dentist and the doctor, because that often gets overlooked. Because typically a foster child in the state system moves, unfortunately, more frequently than we would like to see it happen. It can also be educational advocate to make sure they're getting the support they need in school. Any number of things that could happen, protection from a specific individual in their family who is not good for them to be seen with or around. Any number of things that child might specifically need. In fact, it could be in emergency situations. It could be clothing, because often they are removed from a situation with the clothes on their back.
How did How much time do you get to spend with the child in order to learn what those needs are? How do you find out what these needs are in order to be an advocate for them?
The mandate is that you visit the child in their home situation once a month to make sure they're in a safe environment. Very often, the kids I've worked with have lived in such small spaces that you don't have any place to visit with them privately. So you end up taking them out of the home for a hamburger or something just to get some private time with them to understand. So originally, or when you first meet with them, there's that whole trust building.
Sure.
Because so many of them have been through circumstances most of us can't even fathom. So getting them to trust and open up about what's happening in their lives is critical. So once a month, typically, occasionally, there'll be need to, and especially in an emergency situation, to do more than that. But typically, a child is in foster care long enough that those monthly sessions, you do quite a few of them and you learn quite a bit. And it becomes apparent. There's also team meetings approximately every 30 days. So I get input from the case manager, the DJO, possibly an adoption manager, et cetera, members of the team also.
So you work in conjunction with them as well as part of a team.
Right. And, of course, hearings on a regular basis with the judge, moving everything forward and finding out where they stand with parents, if the parents are involved at all.
And are you able to work around your other responsibilities, your other schedules, like your work here as well? How do you make that all work?
Vacation time, mm-hmm. personal time.
Sure.
I'm able typically to schedule visits with the children on weekends, but court hearings and team meetings, I usually ask for team meetings around lunchtime, and I'm able to schedule around it. And I have a very supportive director in communications here at the Synod. So
sure.
I'm fortunate.
Here at the Synod also, we have a strong desire to support what we believe in, and we're about life and supporting a healthy life for children. And I mean, caring for foster children is a very pro-life thing to do. So how did you get interested in becoming a CASA?
Several years ago, I actually advocated for sexual assault victims. Mm-hmm. In St. Louis, the Sexual Assault Center is run by the YWCA. There was a change in the organization there and change in some of their structure. And I decided maybe I would look for a different avenue for volunteer work. Prior to that, I'd been a big sister through Big Brothers and Big Sisters. And I did some research actually online and found CASA, which is a national organization. Here in St. Louis, they go under the name Voices for Children, very appropriate. So I started doing a little research, put in my application, and they had a class coming up. You do 40 hours of training. So they were eager to get me involved. So I did my application, my interview, and started class within a couple of days.
Wow. And how many children have you been able to serve through this program?
So far in 4 years, I've worked with 6 children. My first case just wrapped up. I had 3 children. The second was an infant, and then the third case is another infant.
Have you found when it comes to the holidays that there are questions or things that you have to address as a CASA?
Yeah, it's interesting because some of the children, my first case was an infant born drug exposed, and when she was abandoned at the hospital, the state found that she had 2 older siblings who then were brought into care. They really had not had any history or tradition around the holidays. And so there was a constant restructuring or introduction. The state, and there are a lot of agencies who collect toys and things for their children at Christmas time. So they have access to some of that. We are able to take them gifts from the judge, not from us, and contribute to that. But yeah, there are questions that come around the holidays. In some cases, missing family initially, especially when they come into the custody of the state. Sometimes they're just literally snapped up from their family, which is very abrupt. So, yeah, a lot of listening to questions they ask and try to get a sense of where they're coming from and help them have a comfort level about where they are now.
And so all of the foster care that you were connected with was all state foster care, correct?
Yes.
Well, this is a whole new world for me. I didn't know anything about this, and very helpful. And thank you for what you do for these children. As we continue our conversation, if you have insights, please chime in and share more with us. I'd like to talk with the Johnsons now about your involvement as foster parents. Ross Morea, what made you consider becoming foster parents?
Well, when we were first married, we never spoke about or talked about adoption or fostering. When we got married, we were kind of an unusual couple. We got married young, but that wasn't the unusual part. Is both of us wanted to have a large family, 8, 9 children, whatever the Lord wanted. And about 10 years into our marriage, we didn't have any children, and all of a sudden we found out that we couldn't conceive. So we started looking at other avenues, and we recalled a very memorable sermon by our pastor, Pastor Espinoza in California, at the time that he himself had adopted a child, and he gave a great sermon about adoption. And he compared how God has adopted us into his family and how God has made us his own. And that was a sermon that just kind of stuck with us for years. And then years later, it's kind of funny how you hear a sermon and it sticks with you, and then where you're at in a different place in life, you kind of recall it. And we had been married for about 10 years, and we didn't have any children, and so we started thinking about adoption. Then we looked at adopting internationally, whether it was in Latin America or Russia or China, and we figured out that it would be my entire annual salary would cost to adopt a child. So we thought, maybe that's not the way. And then we had considered some in vitro fertilization a little bit. And then as we were learning and studying more about it, we weren't comfortable with some of the biological, ethical issues that surround it. And I think that's one area that we as the church need to learn more about. Pastors need to learn more about it. Lay people need to learn more about what is it to conceive life and then freeze life. Then what do you do with those fertilized eggs that you don't use? I know a lot of people are very eager to have their own biological children, which is very understandable. But there's a lot of issues that go along with it that a lot of times we don't even think about those. But that's an issue for another show. And so we decided we didn't want to go down that path. And so we started talking about fostering, and we were hearing ads for foster children. At the time, we were living in Alabama. And I know each state has nuanced differences. I know you have listeners all throughout the United States. So I think a lot of the things we'll be talking about will have overlap in different states. But we started looking into it, and it was a big step, and we kind of went that direction.
It's interesting because, you know, here I am, a young 30-something-year-old, and I wasn't thinking of fostering, to be really honest. I wanted to do adoption. But the classes in Alabama for adoption are actually both adoption and foster care. And as we sat there through weeks and weeks of classes, they spoke a lot about foster care. And Ross really just felt convicted and led to want to foster a child. And in all honesty, I was not thrilled about it. I was scared. I was scared of the reality of foster care. I was scared of not being able to meet a child's needs, not knowing what to do, because Ross and I both grew up in a very stable home, and we're very fortunate to have really great Christian parents. So I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to help the child and know what to do with these children. But Ross was very convincing. I don't know how else to put it.
I used a little bit of Christian guilt and, you know, did Bible verses. And remember Pastor Espinoza said
yes,
about adoption?
Okay. Exactly. And I told Ross, okay, I'll try it. I said I will be committed to the child that comes our way, whether it's a day or 18 years. And I said, but I reserve the right to say after that, I want to do this or not. And we actually wound up with a teenager. And a teenage girl, and she actually was only there for a day, but we didn't know that. She came in and went to court the next day, and she changed her story and got to go back home. But I remember thinking, wow, we almost had a teenager. You know, that was a little overwhelming.
Am I ready to be a parent of a teenager?
Exactly. So, and then shortly after, we got a phone call for a six-week-old and a brother, his brother, that was almost two. And we got a phone call, and they said, you know, these two little boys really, really need a home. And it was Holy Week. And I remember Ross was ready to preach that day, and we ran, picked him up, and we didn't have a crib, we didn't have diapers, we didn't have anything. Talk about, we didn't have 9 months to prepare. We just had these two little boys that needed a home. So we decided,
yeah, it was a Wednesday afternoon at 3:30. I get the phone call, and I said, can I call you back in a day after I talk to my wife? They said, we can give you an hour or so, but we got to go down the list because these children need to be placed in a home tonight. We don't have anywhere else for them to go. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, let me call my wife. So I called her up. She was teaching school at the time. I said, what do you think about this idea? She said, let's give it a try. And it was Wednesday night, and all of a sudden we went from not having a stuffed animal, or I had never changed a diaper before, anything like that, to having two children. My members at the church that I was serving were wonderful. They gave us cribs and all of the kind of emergency essentials, and I got a crash course on being a parent. But when you first contact the state with interest of being a foster parent, they do give you like 10 weeks of training. They do talk to you about what it is to be a foster parent, but it's different when you get your first foster child in your home. And when you contact the state, they give you 10 weeks of classes. They give you preparation so that you have, you understand how the system works.
But no diaper training,
apparently. No diaper training. But they, you know, they do a background check on you. They check out your home to make sure that it's safe and secure. They do a quick home inspection. But after that, you're kind of on your own. And it was a great experience, but a very scary experience at first.
So it was scary, but something that you had been, in a sense, hoping for, too, it sounds like.
Well, when you foster, there's basically three paths that you can take, right? So you could foster, which is usually a day to a couple of months, and you're just a temporary foster parent. Or you could try to foster to adopt, meaning that there's high probability that that child will be up for adoption. They kind of know. The caseworkers know from the situation of the family that there's a high probability that they will be adoptable. And that's what Murray and I were wanting to do.
Foster to adopt.
And when we received the boys at first, they thought that there was a high likelihood that we would be able to adopt them. So that was the path that we were going on and wanting to take.
And so you get two boys in your home during Holy Week in a pastor's family, pastor and a teacher.
Yeah.
Two boys and not quite prepared. One an infant and one a toddler.
Yes.
And Ross had never changed a diaper in his life.
No. it was overwhelming, to say the least. But, you know, it was fantastic. They fit in, you know, to this day, because they're still with us, our boys. People just don't realize that they're not our biological children. They fit in with us perfectly. They are just fantastic, fantastic young boys. And we've had a wonderful time with them. Mm-hmm. And I know that you had talked a little bit about Christmas and such. You know, when they were with us as foster children, the idea was to continue the relationship with their biological parents. And that was difficult on different levels. One, you know, the parents weren't Christian. And that was a little bit difficult because I didn't know how long we'd have the boys. We were hoping to foster to adopt, but we just didn't know if that was a certainty or a reality. And so our number one goal as Christians, we thought we're going to continue to give these boys the gospel, tell them who Christ is. And we knew that even though we had an infant and a toddler, that we know that there's life in the Word of God. And so as we shared the gospel with them, it was up to the Holy Spirit to work. And that was our number one priority was to share the gospel with the boys and to share the gospel with their parents. And also, as time went by, we wanted to make sure that the parents knew that they were valuable people. We are so grateful. You know, the parents, even though they're not Christians, as non-Christians, they could have made a different choice. They really could have. They really could have chosen not to have these children. And instead, they chose life. And I'm so grateful for that. And we are so grateful for them as their biological parents. The parents love them. They really do. They just have had a difficult life, and mm-hmm. they themselves haven't made the best decisions. And so Ross and I were very intentional in our way of interacting with the parents And like, for example, at Christmas time, what can we do for the parents that still makes them feel a part of the family, that still makes them feel like these are their children as well? So one thing that I did was I put a photo book together. We had, you know, gotten them during Holy Week. We took a boatload of pictures and we put, just on one of those photo books, we made a whole photo book, but we also put captions. This is, his first lollipop, his first tooth. This is, the toddler. He's out of diapers now. Whatever it was, we put all those moments in this photo book so that the mom and the dad could have also glimpses of their children's childhood. So, we still try to bring in the parents and make them a special part of Christmas, even though, the children weren't with them.
How did that first Christmas go? How did that... one, it was your first Christmas with kids in the house.
Yes.
Two, you're a foster family, so you have this added a dimension to this as well, trying to include the parents, letting them know that that they're appreciated.
Yes, exactly. So like I said, we had made the photo books, but what we did, again, Ross and I were very intentional with the boys in terms of, it's really funny. I think sometimes if these would have been our biological children, would we have put as much effort as we did, with these boys, because we just didn't know how long we'd have them. So we were really, it wasn't about Santa Claus. We'd tell them about Christ and his birth. And like I said, we gave them church. We gave them Christ. We would take them. We took them to the services and such. They did get to be with their parents, for X amount of hours on Christmas Day. We encouraged the parents to go to church. We gave them gifts. The boys were very young at the time. They didn't quite, the older one, the toddler knew that those were his biological parents. He couldn't have worded it that way, but he knew that was mom and dad. He struggled more at the time than the baby did. The baby didn't, know much, but the parents were just very grateful, wouldn't you say, Ross? Just very grateful for the fact that we were trying to include them in on things. We let them come over to the house and spend some time with us so that the kids, they could have the Christmas tree, like Bonnie said earlier, the traditions, the meal. And so we wanted them to have a part of that as well, because we kind of saw fostering as not only helping the children, but also being a light to the parents. We saw it that way as well.
Murray brings up a good point that as foster parents, you have an amazing opportunity to share your Christian faith in a very dynamic and ongoing way. So a lot of times when we evangelize, whether it's a coworker or we talk about our faith with somebody that we meet in the store, it's a very short conversation often, or it's a glimpse of the gospel. But when you have a child that lives in your home, you're able to have ongoing conversations about the Christian faith. And you can raise a child or rear a child in the one true Christian faith. And it's really a great opportunity to be able to express that faith, to bring that child to church, to have that. Many times these children would never have any kind of Christian churchly exposure in their entire life. So Christian foster parents can be a light into the world of darkness that these children come from.
Did you develop family traditions did family traditions come out of that first year and the following year as well?
Yes, definitely. Well, the boys have really learned. Their biological parents still see them to this day. And they will come down during the Christmas season, and the boys just know. They talk to their parents. Christmas is about church and about Christ, and they encourage their parents, let's go to church. And the boys know it's about the Christ child, and they've really talked to their parents quite a bit about that. And that's really neat for us. That's a really great tradition. And the boys also have the typical kid stuff. We open presents, one present on Christmas Eve, and open up a bunch of presents on Christmas Day, and we have tamales or all that kind of fun stuff.
Well, that's what I was going to ask about, some traditions that come from their background, from their families, or from their their family's culture as well. Do you have any traditions?
Yes.
From your families, from your cultures
that we were very fortunate. The boys are half Latino and half Anglo, And so are we. Ross and I are. I don't know if your audience could figure out who's who, but I'm the Latina. And Ross is the Anglo. I guess that's what you call him, the Caucasian person. And they fit in. That's why they fit in so perfectly, because the boys seem like they're exactly, you know, our children. And it's been really fun because they get both sides of that from Ross's family and from mine. So, mm-hmm. you know, that movie from way back when, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, that is Ross Johnson and Maria Johnson's family. Mine is the Greek side, but Latina, the tamales, the, you know, the all the Hispanics and the Spanish and all of that.
We'll
that
talk about those traditions in just
yes,
a little bit.
Exactly.
Talk about these two families of exactly. origin and now bringing another family yes. of origin into this as well. We need to take a quick break. When we come back from that break, we'll learn more about the holidays with the Johnson family as a foster family and learn more about being a foster family as well. What are the different types of foster families and how you can become a foster family? You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
What's your perfect mental image of Christmas? Perhaps it's being surrounded by family around a cozy fire with a beautiful twinkling Christmas tree nearby. Oh, and a blanket of snow outside, which may be hard to achieve if you live in Miami or San Diego. Such an idyllic Christmas is far from reality for many Americans. Life's troubles may be entirely eclipsing their most wonderful time of the year. Young women and men facing an unexpected pregnancy may feel like their world has come to an end and abortion is the only answer. This Christmas, please commit to spiritually adopting such a couple and regularly pray for them. Ask the Holy Spirit to send an earthly angel to show them positive, life-affirming alternatives to abortion. Pray, because life depends on it.
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
God's word is our great heritage and shall be ours forever. To spread its light from age to age shall be our chief endeavor. I'm William Whedon, LCMS Director of Worship, inviting you to be sure and join us as we romp through chapter after chapter of the Sacred Scriptures, rejoicing in the salvation that's ours in Jesus Christ. Join us.
Thy Strong Word, weekday mornings at 11 on Worldwide KFUO. Underwritten by Lutheran Heritage Foundation, lhfmissions.org.
Does your church need help to discover its true mission? Hi, this is Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. It happens to all of us. At some point in our lives, we get distracted, confused, or maybe even burned out, and eventually we lose focus. So it's nice to know at times like these that you have a partner at LCEF. Our ministry support services can help your church clarify its mission so it enjoys sustained health and growth. Learn more at www.lcef.org.
Join Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service and thousands of congregations across the country as they observe Refugee Sunday, a time to celebrate the gifts migrants and refugees bring to the United States. Pick a Sunday that works best for your congregation to celebrate. New resource kits, including bulletin insert and poster, will be available soon. Sign up for our newsletter at lirs.org/rebuildinghope.
The majority of our support comes from individual listeners just like you. We appreciate you so much. However, a portion of our support is from underwriting partners. What is underwriting? Well, underwriting is when an organization, a church, or a business makes a financial gift to KFUO in support of our broadcast ministry. As part of our underwriting partnership, KFUO gives the underwriters on-air announcements to spread the word and inform you, the listener, about their business or mission. Do you believe that KFUO and the worldwide proclamation of the gospel is worthy of your support? Do you have a business, organization, or ministry that could benefit from being a KFUO underwriter? If so, contact me, Gary Duncan, at 314-996-1511 or email gifts@kfuo.org and let us know you would love to be a KFUO underwriter. We'll help you get your message out as you help us reach the world with the good news message of Christ. We are listener-supported, KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We are talking about foster families and the joys, the challenges of being a foster family, and a number of people in studio today. We're most recently talking with the Johnson family, Maria and Ross Johnson, who have served as foster parents. And before we went to break, we were talking about your family of origin, and I didn't get to this yet, the traditions that come from your families, talking about some of the traditions that each of you bring, and then now having foster children as well. What does that bring to this, to these family traditions as well? Ross, tell me about some of your family traditions with Christmas and the holidays as a kid growing up, and what you bring to this new Johnson family.
So as we were on the break and I was thinking about this, it seems so just, it's just Christmas, but there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. For example, we get a Christmas tree, we decorate the house, mm-hmm. we open a gift on Christmas Eve, the rest of them at the crack of dawn on Christmas Day or before dawn on Christmas Day. Mom always makes a great meal, whether it's ham or turkey, that all depends on how we beg her, apple pie. But these are the kind of things that I just kind of take for granted. You don't even think about it. It's just what Christmas is. However, a lot of children that are in the foster care system have no idea of what it is to have a Christmas tree in the home, what it is to have turkey or ham, what it is to have gifts to open, what it is to have a loving home, what it is to have joy on Christmas morning, what the reason of the season is. And so the things that we take for granted every day, a lot of children across the United States that are in these really ugly situations have no idea, even what you and I would think of as just kind of typical Christmas activity. So we were able to incorporate all this type of traditional Americana Christmas activity in culture and in faith into Christmas, which they hadn't had, they probably wouldn't have. And tragically, thousands and thousands of children across this state and across the United States don't have those kind of just basic American traditions. Mm-hmm. And it's not to have a tradition for the tradition or the memories for memories, but it's neat to have the faith that's included with those traditions and those memories.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Maria, what are some of the traditions that your family has around Christmas?
Well, I'm from California, and so Ross has made it, especially since we have the boys now, he's really made an effort to make sure we go out to California every other year because of our family traditions. And all of our family, all the cousins and their children and their children's children. And
how many people does this turn out to be?
Maybe about, it's not very big. We don't have a very big family, about 40. And we really don't have, that's all. And
not very big, just 40.
Yeah, exactly. Just yesterday we were talking about what we were looking forward to, and the boys can't wait to see their family. That was the biggest thing. We can't wait for Christmas Day because everyone gets together. And, you know, one of my cousins is just fantastic. She's embraced the boys and always has gifts for them, and she is wonderful. But at this, you know, everyone's speaking Spanish. There's a piñata involved. And like I said before, tamales, enchiladas, pozole, just this great, wonderful feast of Latin American food. And the boys love it. They love everything about it. My grandma's there, you know, my aunts and uncles. So that's a real treat for us.
That brings up another point is we, a lot of times, Maria and I take for granted family. Even if you have a small family, you still have a ongoing communicative relationship with your parents and your sisters, at least, or brothers. However, a lot of children that are in the foster care system, they don't have any family. Their parents are estranged from maybe even their biological other parent. And they're completely estranged from everybody else that's in their family. And they don't have the knowledge of any cousins, brothers or sisters, parents even. And for them to be able to, our boys, to be able to have been adopted by Moraes and my family is really a neat thing for them. And they love the idea of family. And that's one of the biggest blessings is to have to give a foster child family. We've had the boys now for 8 years. So we've been able to bring in, build up a lot of traditions, and we have a lot deeper relationships with them, and their extended family now has a lot of memories with them. And they're at the point now that they're going to have these memories for the rest of their lives.
So they've been able to embrace these traditions and be a part of these traditions and be now a part of the extended family.
Yes.
And that seems like something that every child would hope for. It sounds like they've really liked it. They've really enjoyed these family traditions.
They definitely do. You know, it's interesting, and I'm sure that Bonnie and Michelle have seen this, but, you know, with children, our boys love their foster parents. I mean, their biological parents. They love them. There aren't any grudges. There isn't any animosity. They pray for them. They are so happy to talk to them on the phone, or if their biological parents come and visit, they're so happy to see them. But they're at a point now in their life where they also realize that they can't be with their parents and that there's reasons why. They don't know the reasons. They're young, but they know that it's just not a possibility. And that makes them so grateful to have us and our extended family. They are just, they get it. They still have a sister in foster care. And she's had a lot of, you know, she's done the unfortunate typical foster care, go from one home to another and different things that Bonnie spoke of earlier. And they see that reality. And it's obviously very front and center for them. So they've come to really appreciate the fact that they have us in their life, and that we've been a constant for, like Ross said, for 8 years. They're so grateful for that.
You mentioned earlier you started foster with the hopes of fostering to adopt.
Yes.
How's that looking?
It's been a rocky road. Whenever you're working in the foster care system, there is no absolute set. You absolutely are going to adopt, or you absolutely will not adopt, or you will only have these children for 2 days, or you will only have them for 2 months, or for us, it's been 8 years. I believe the technical time that we were foster parents was 18, 19 months. Then the state put them back in the custody of the parents. However, the parents weren't able to raise them. So we would say, hey, well, why don't we help you out on the weekends? And then that ended up still not being enough help for the parents. So we said, why don't we, as they're getting into preschool, why don't we have them Monday through Friday? And then you guys have them Saturday afternoon and Sunday. And then that ended up being still a little bit more than the parents could handle. So we would have them essentially full time. And then the parents would just spend time with them on a weekend or two for a few hours. And then 3 years ago, we were moving to St. Louis, and the state of Alabama, where we were living at the time, said, we need to have some kind of permanent, because the parents don't have the skills or abilities to rear these children. And we'd like the children to continue to live with you in St. Louis. And we said, we would love that. And we became their permanent legal guardians, which is not permanent. So it's in between being a foster parent and it's in between adopting. So we have not adopted them yet. We would like to do that in the future, Lord willing. But we are legal guardians, so we can travel with them. We can take them to the doctor's office. We can get them enrolled in school and all these types of things, but we are not legally adoptive parents yet.
Yeah.
But you're still a very happy family.
Oh, very. And, you know, I don't know if the ladies see this often or not. We just became committed to the boys. Mm-hmm. That's really what it boils down to. When they went back with their parents still needed a lot of help. And they still needed a support system. And Ross and I were committed to those two little boys. And we just decided, well, we can continue with foster care, which would have been fine. Or we can continue, since the parents are allowing us, we can continue to try to be a support system for these two boys and their parents as well. And that's really what it wound up being. I'm so grateful that the parents allowed us to be in their life, mm-hmm. you know, and like I talked to the parents, I just talked to them yesterday, and it has turned out to be a very good relationship. And, you know, I just talked to their dad. I was telling this to Ross about a week ago, and he called me just to thank me and to say, thank you. I know my boys are safe. He said, I know they're in a good family. I know they're loved, and they are getting opportunities that they would have never received with us. Thank you. And that to me was worth 8 years of a lot of roller coaster. It really was.
And maybe your guest can expand on this a little bit, but I've kind of seen with foster parents, there's kind of two types of foster parents. One for self-preservation, you kind of have to be a little bit standoffish because it is an emotional roller coaster having children. And a lot of times when your foster children go back to the biological parents' home, it isn't a great situation, or they have to be moved to another home. It really tears at your heart. So a lot of times you have kind of a velvet over steel or steel over velvet kind of a personality just for self-preservation. Mireille and I decided when we got these, maybe it was out of a lack of experience, to treat them like they were our biological children and love them like they are our children. The problem with that is it is extremely difficult emotionally on you. As you are kind of going through this roller coaster of, are they going to stay with you forever? Are they going to go back? If they go back, what's that situation going to be like? You know, are they ever going to graduate high school if they go back to with their parents? And you start, your mind just kind of goes a thousand directions. Are they ever going to go to church again? What's going to happen to their faith? Is it going to be nourished? Or, you know, you just, your mind just goes crazy. So it's very, very difficult to love your foster child like your own biological child. But that's the road that Mireille and I went mm-hmm. in, even though it's been extremely difficult at times. You know, they've received all of our love as well.
Yeah, it's been so rewarding. Those little boys, they light up our life. We were talking about that yesterday with the boys. Our life is better. Mm-hmm. It's messier. It's more chaotic. And I wouldn't change anything. They are the biggest blessing to us outside of our faith. And, you know, it's just, I can't believe the Lord chose to give us these boys.
Privilege of spending some time with them as well, and they are delightful young men. Yes. They are you've raised some fine young men, and had a privilege one Sunday to spend some time with them and talk with them, visit with them a little bit, and they're boys. They're typical kids, I should say. They're typical yes. kids in terms of how they interact with one another, but they're also very courteous young men as well, and so fine work. Thanks for doing what you do, to echo what the father said to you as well. Thanks for what you do. Thank you for sharing your story today. I want to turn our attention now to another guest. We have Michelle Davis. She's a case manager with Lutheran Family and Children's Services of Missouri. Michelle, thanks for joining us here in studio today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Michelle, there are a couple of different kinds of foster care. Tell me a little bit about the work that you do with Lutheran Family and Children's Services of Missouri.
So I am a foster care case manager at Lutheran Family and Children's Services, and I kind of do what the guests here do. I work with foster families who have decided to be foster parents, and either they foster and work with the family for the kids to go back home, or they foster to adopt, or they foster until that child can move to another place safely. So that is my role, but we also have foster parents for our crisis care program, where we have parents who are in a situation where they may have to be hospitalized, and because they don't have a family support system, they're in temporary foster care for quite some time, or 30 days, or whatever mm-hmm. that situation may be. So, and then we have foster parents who foster our teens, and their goal is to help those kids get to a point of independence where they can have a family connection, an adult person that they can talk to, like they were talking about early. Some of our kids don't have an aunt or an uncle or anybody they can call if they get sick, or how do I write a check, or how do I do this? So we have foster parents who they don't necessarily want to adopt, but they will foster and they will help that child grow. And then when they get that child to a point of independence, they teach them how to be the independent.
And so Lutheran Family and Children's Services of Missouri has a foster program. And,
yes.
and much of what we've been talking about today is a state foster program.
Yes.
How is the foster program through Lutheran Family and Children's Services different or like the state
it's
program?
It's much alike. We're contracted from the state or through the state of Missouri, and we work with foster parents and we work with Voices for Children as well in the court. And what happens is we have children birthed to 13, 14, 15 on up. And for whatever reason, the birth family can't provide or can't take care of those children at the time. And so they come into custody through the court, through the state, and we are obligated to find foster families to care for them until they can rectify that situation. And so it becomes a team support. Once they come into custody, the case manager is assigned, and we try to provide services for the birth family for that child to return home safely. But if not, we're on the other side with the mm-hmm. foster parents providing supports for that child to grow and thrive. And
what is the need in Missouri right now? What are the needs when it comes to how many foster children are in need of a foster family?
Why? I could not tell you the exact number, but I can tell you the need is great. I sometimes am on call on weekends and help when the children come into care. And just for instance, one night we got a family of seven, and trying to find a foster family to take seven children at one time is kind of hard. So needless to say, it was a task. I ended up having to spend the night with the children because I just couldn't find anywhere mm-hmm. for them to go until the next day, way into the afternoon. And so what happens is, like the family we have here, they have good homes and the kids are stable, and then, you know, they adopt or they're there long term. And so that takes away a foster family, and we don't have one to replace it. So the need is very great. We have children who need a different type of foster home. And, you know, we have older children, and so some people aren't equipped. Like, if you've never had a kid before, trying to parent a teenager is kind of hard, but, you know, there's training. So the need is great. We have many children who come into custody, and we don't have a place to put them because there's no uncle, there's no relative to say, hey, I'll step up. And so sometimes.
And as you pointed out, sometimes there are sibling situations
yes.
where you had seven children
yes.
that needed a family. And so it can be kind of, I'm sure, daunting at times.
Very
for
daunting.
Those who've said, yes, we'd like to be a foster family, we'd like to be foster parents.
But seven's a little bit much.
how do we do that? How do we make, you know, how do we make that work on short notice too?
On short notice. And, you know, what we had to do was put them in separate homes, but that becomes, if you do have a faith base or you do have a support system where foster parents say, hey, I can take three and I can take these three, and they get together, so that sibling bond stays together. But also as well, everybody's getting nurtured, everybody's mm-hmm. growing, everybody's learning. But, you know, the kids are okay, that my siblings are okay, because that becomes an issue as well, because the older siblings are worried about where are my younger siblings. And so it's nice when foster parents, we have loving foster parents who work together and say, okay, we're going to make sure these kids are okay, and you guys work on the other side. And, you know, it becomes a support network that has to happen in order for these kids to survive.
Mm-hmm. Or you need some foster families that have about six or seven bedrooms.
Six or seven, or the kids have gone off to college, or, you know, my son just asked me, he's 17 and he's getting ready to graduate, what are you going to do when I go off to college? I said, oh, I'll get some foster kids. I'll be okay. You know, so, yeah, so it's nice, you know.
What are the steps to becoming a foster family, becoming foster parents through Lutheran Family and Children's Services of Missouri? What are the first steps?
So the first step is just to have the will and the heart. It takes a lot of heart and a lot of patience and a lot of understanding, because like they were saying, you're not just working with those kids, you're working with the birth family, because the kids do love their parents and they need to see that relationship nurtured as well so that they can mm-hmm. be okay. But the first step is basically making a phone call to Lutheran 314-787-5100 and just asking about becoming a foster parent. And when you talk to the worker, you can just decide what type of fostering would be best for you. I mean, we have, like I said, we have a crisis program, and we have foster parents who simply, you know, they help us out on a temporary basis. And then we have foster parents who are in it for the long haul. And, you know, like they say, it gets heartbreaking when they have to go home. Mm. But if they do it right and they've nurtured that relationship, it becomes a bigger family. And so...
Maria brought up a good point earlier when talking about the birth parents of the boys that they care for, that they wanted to they wanted the boys to see that they appreciated mm-hmm. the parents, and they knew that the boys loved their birth parents as well. As a foster parent, sometimes we might face questions of, well, what did they do that caused this situation to begin with? But Maria brought up a good point that these parents made a good choice in that they chose life right. for these kids, for these right. children. And that's what they it sounds like they really focus on in building that relationship, and that there's an opportunity to build a relationship with the birth parents, and that for the boys to have a healthy relationship right. with their birth parents as well. Is that something you face?
Yeah, and that's important because the birth family is very key to helping those kids grow, because a lot of stuff we don't know, health stuff, you know, you need to get that from the birth family. But also if the kids can see that you don't look down on their birth parents, or that their birth parents have a problem or issue that right now they just can't take care of me, but I do have somebody to take care of me, it goes a long way, because the kids can... be comfortable in, it's okay to love my foster mom and foster dad, and it's okay to love my birth family as well. And sometimes that's a struggle, because the kids are trying to remain loyal to the birth family and don't want them to feel bad about me loving my foster parents. But then kids are very perceptive of safety, and I'm being very well taken care of, and so they have a sense of calm when they're in a safe, protected environment. And so if you can nurture that birth family as well as the kids, it becomes a better situation. Not always easy, but at some point it does become a better situation for everybody involved.
We have just about 2 minutes left. The holidays, Christmas, right mm-hmm. around the corner. What are some of the questions, some of the needs that need to be addressed during the holidays when it comes to foster families and foster kids?
All kids like presents. You know, we try to make sure that they all get something special. And then really, like, you know, like she said, the book you made was a good idea, because kids are, believe it or not, presents may be the last thing. They just want to talk to their mom and dad, or they just want to know their siblings are okay. So even if it's a foster family and another foster family getting together with the siblings just so they know everything's okay. Holidays are hard. Trying to incorporate everything and everybody. But, you know, if you could incorporate the birth family and you could incorporate outside people, just for the kids to understand that this is one big family, not just my birth family, my foster family. It just becomes family, and take the labels off. You know, it's helpful for the kids to grow.
So you can approach this. It might take a lot of organizing.
It might take
a lot of energy.
It does.
To the Johnsons, did you find this to be exhausting, trying to stay on top of everything and trying to include everyone? And just
it is it is really difficult. And, you know, just the other day, I you have to really think, you know, and I have to put the ego and the pride aside, and I've got to put all of the side of I've done this and I've done that and I've been here, and I have to put that all to the side and remember that I want these boys to love their parents and respect them and honor them and have a healthy relationship with them. Because in the long run, that helps the boys out to be really good people. And, you know, and so I was just, okay, let's take pictures of you guys in front of the Christmas tree. Let's send that to your bio parents. And just a quick text, hey guys, here are the boys. That made a world of difference. They call, they talk to them for an hour. And, you know, it's hard. It really honestly is. But for love of Christ, for love of children, we continue to do it. We continue to have that relationship with the parents.
I'm so glad you brought up the point of setting aside pride. Mm-hmm. We've worked very hard in order to provide this. I'm sure that is challenging to set
so
that
hard.
Aside. Mm-hmm. But you bring up such a good point that you want these boys, it's for the best for those mm-hmm. boys. It's for their health and for their well-being that they see respect for their parents.
Yes.
Well, thank you all for being my guest today, helping us talk about being foster parents and foster care for these children, especially during the holidays. Bonnie Parker, court-appointed special advocate, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Andy.
And Maria and Ross Johnson, foster family, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas.
And Michelle Davis, case manager, Lutheran Family and Children's Services in Missouri. Michelle, thanks so much for coming over today.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.